This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob Holsworth is the founder and president of VirginiaTomorrow.com. You can check it out online and learn everything you need to know about the very latest that's going on in Virginia politics. Bob joins us on Monday afternoons to keep us updated. Bob, good afternoon, first of all. How are you?
I'm doing great, Coy. How are you doing?
I'm good. I hope you enjoyed the weekend's weather that we had two lovely days back to back.
Could have been better, couldn't it?
Yeah, it was just perfect. We just spoke with Sean Kenny, former director of communications for the Republican Party of Virginia, and I would be remiss if I didn't point out that at BearingDrift.com, one of the most notable conservative blogs in Virginia, Sean Kenny's name is in the front runner among their readers for the next chairman of the Virginia GOP. He didn't mention that, but that is a fact. Sean told us, Bob, that the Virginia Republicans just want to get this behind them. That by the time they have their convention, that this will be a distant memory, this episode that took place this weekend. And I'm sure that they hope that, and they very well could be right. What's your read on what happened this weekend, and give us your take?
Well, I think Sean's probably correct on that. That I think at the end of the day here, the vast majority of people on the state central committee felt that Jeff Frederick was too much of a loose cannon, that they really couldn't trust what might happen throughout the summer and during the campaign, and they decided they wanted to remove him and put somebody else in. Now, at the same time, Frederick did have supporters. He has supporters in Republican communities around the state. So I think what's important, if they're going to put this behind them, is to find a candidate that some of the Frederick supporters can agree to. Because the last thing they want to have is sort of this to come back at the convention, which is supposed to be a coronation of Bob McDonnell, and have a contested fight over the party chair with Frederick in the middle of it once again.
What do you think of the chances of that happening?
I think they're relatively slim, because I'm just not sure that most people, particularly as they get a little detached from the events of last week, are going to believe that it's in the party's interest at all to have that kind of fight in the middle of a convention that is going to be very closely watched, not only by the Virginia media, but by the national media. It would simply be close to insanity for the Republican Party to stage that kind of fight on May 30th, and my sense is that they're not going to do it.
We're talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, going into the weekend, Frederick was saying he had the votes, and we were talking with Sean Kenny about how it looks like he did have the votes.
It was pretty close, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If one person, if all of a sudden one person had shown up from the 6th District, he would have had the votes to stay on. But again, it gets back to that old question, what would a win have meant? That only 74.9% of the people at the convention wanted to remove him? That would have been disastrous for the party. So my sense is that at the end of the day, the party did probably what was in the party's interest at the time. And I'm sure that we haven't heard the last from Jeff Frederick, but I don't believe that people are going to want to prolong this particular fight and have it go on throughout the summer, just at a time where the Republicans feel pretty comfortable that they have a real good shot at being very competitive in the gubernatorial races here.
We're talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, let's pull the camera back here and see the forest for the trees here. What does this mean for the Republican Party of Virginia, generally speaking, to have ousted a social conservative as their chairman? What do you think we might see to replace him? And I asked Sean Kenny this question: Would it be another social conservative who's about guns and gays and abortion and this kind of thing, or will it be a fiscal moderate, a chamber of commerce type from the business world? And Sean seems to say that, sort of said something to the effect that that's not really the issue. The issue is, can they organize Republicans of all stripes at all levels throughout Virginia to get out and work on these campaigns?
Well, that's exactly what the party chair has to do. But at the same time, I think to keep peace in the party, there is going to have to be an individual selected who at least is acceptable the social conservatives. It doesn't mean that that's the only part of the party ideology that the person embraces or is not necessarily the part that they give absolute priority to. But my sense is that if they're going to avoid the kind of floor fight that they really want to avoid at the convention, they're going to need a candidate who can appeal to, as party chair, to a wide variety of people in the party and has some prominence, at least inside party circles.
Bob Holdsworth is my guest. Have you heard any names?
Well, dozens of names put out there. As
yeah.
you mentioned earlier, Sean Kenny's name's been out there. Alexandra Liddy Bourne has been out there. Pat Mullins of Louise has been out there. Then, of course, there are sort of the big names, you might say, the George Allens, the Gillespies.
Davis,
The folks that are out there that would perhaps unify people simply by virtue of their name. So what direction the party's eventually going to go in, I think, a little too early to say. But I do believe that it's going to be absolutely critical for them to put forward a name that at least some portion of the Frederick supporters are going to say, that's a decent enough name for us, let's move on.
Now, as far as the politics of this are concerned, would we see any of the Democratic candidates for high office in Virginia getting any hay out of this?
Well, I think they're going to try to talk about a Republican Party that's divided, a Republican Party that can't get its act together. But the fact is that for the vast majority of the public, this is totally inside baseball. It has nothing to do with the challenges that they're facing in their lives today. And I think this campaign is going to eventually be about far bigger issues than how the Republican Party selected the chairman.
And those issues are?
Well, obviously the declining economy, the threats to people well-being that we're seeing, the job losses. We have parts of Virginia, Martinsville, have a 20% unemployment rate now. Statewide, our unemployment rate is just going up and up. We have those kind of issues that really affect people's lives, and it seems to me that's what the campaign is going to be about. It's going to be a far more serious campaign than a frivolous campaign about an internal party decision.
We're talking with Bob Holdsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, tell us who Delegate Joe Morrissey is. And why we're talking about him.
Well, Delegate Joe Morrissey, sometimes called Fighting Joe here in Richmond, is a member of the House of Delegates from Richmond Henrico. He won the Democratic nomination in a contested primary a couple of years ago and, looks to be pretty well ensconced in the House right now. And what he did is that he just recently sued last week Style magazine here in Richmond for $10.5 million. It's often very difficult, Coy, for a public official to win a lawsuit against a media operation because as public officials, you can say a lot about them. But there are a lot of people who actually believe that Joe Morrissey may have a potential case in this lawsuit, that what they said about him may or may not be, I can't tell for sure, factually accurate. And it's going to be a suit that a lot of people are going to watch.
Now, Bob, for those in Central Virginia who aren't familiar with Style magazine, fill us in, and then if you can, to whatever degree you're able to, what did they allege about Joe Morrissey?
Well, first of all, it's one of those weekly magazines that you see pop up over the last two decades across Virginia that started off as essentially an entertainment magazine, a dining magazine, but over time develop an interest in public affairs, but they do so in a kind of unique way. And a number of these magazines do it this way. They're part the tattler and part the muckraker.
Right, right.
And they combine those two features. And sometimes some people believe that they play, they push the edge, you might say, on journalistic accountability. So here is an instance where they basically wanted to say that Joe Morrissey was dead broke, but he also seemed to have some money, and that he told the court one thing when in reality he was doing something else. And Morrissey basically said that the report was factually inaccurate. He asked for an apology three times, said that he didn't get one, and now has issued this lawsuit. And the reality is that there are people in the Richmond community who are very divided about this. that on one hand, there's this sense that Morrissey, who had lost his law license because of some activities that he engaged in that the Bar Association felt were totally inappropriate, improper, and in some instances illegal, is not always the most favorably viewed person in the area. But at the same time, there are a lot of people in the Richmond area who, over time, had become very frustrated with the kind of journalism that was being practiced at this magazine, and they have become rooters for Morrissey.
Wow, gosh. So a $10.5 million lawsuit.
Right, and it's a big one. I guess if you're going to have a lawsuit, you might as well go all in.
Yeah, is he going to represent...
Here's the interesting feature about this, too, Coy, is a lot of these magazines are connected in one way or another, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly, to very prominent, respectable, responsible journalistic enterprises. So Style, for a while, was owned by Landmark Communications. And as you know, people like Frank Batten and W. Wynn are some of the great public servants in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Batten had a tremendous gift to UVA for their School of Public Policy. W. Wynn is one of the people that I admire the most in the state of Virginia. And how all of a sudden journalistic enterprises that have, just impeccable reputations wind up buying, media outlets that have, I think, very different reputations is a kind of interesting twist on what's happening in the media world today.
Right. And let's talk about that, because you've been writing about that as well. Just the hemorrhaging of jobs in journalism in Virginia, especially at these big newspapers. I learned today that Warren Fisk and Dale Eisman of the Virginia Pilot also were bought out. They're gone.
Right. Well, there have been hemorrhaging of jobs. We might, to be honest and candid about that, everywhere.
Yes, of course. Absolutely.
In all industries.
In all
what
industries.
What I think is unique about the newspaper industry at the moment, or if not unique, but notable, is that most people believe that a lot of these jobs are never coming back, that what we're seeing is a real decline in the business model of newspapers. So what you saw last week is the Times-Dispatch had 59 layoffs, I think, didn't fill another 31 positions, 90 positions gone, probably gone forever. You saw two of the most prominent political reporters in the Commonwealth of Virginia, Dale Eisman and Warren Fisk, being bought out by the Pilot. And what we're just seeing is this continued hemorrhaging of these papers. And what the Times-Dispatch did, I think, is that what they did is, from what I can gather, is they closed down their out-of-town bureaus for the most part. So they don't have a reporter simply covering Charlottesville and UVA. They don't have a reporter covering Petersburg. They don't have a reporter covering the Williamsburg area. And what they'll probably do is use either wire copy or use some of the other media general outlets that actually do exist in those areas for stories about those regions. The second thing they did was that they eliminated some positions where they could find people writing on national syndication less expensively, for example, the movie reviewer. And so if you take a look at what they did, it made some sense in terms of a business logic.
Right.
Trying to narrow their scope, focus on the Richmond metropolitan area, and get news from outside elsewhere, just as Media General just closed down its Washington bureau as well.
Amazing.
So they're striving to stay alive this way, but the reality, I think, or my hope, I would guess, is that over the next year or two, or over the next 6 months, over the next 8 months, we begin to see people develop alternative models. Perhaps for politics, a niche paper for Virginia like the Politico does nationally. Let's see some experimentation. Let's see if there can be alternative business models or nonprofits coming in to run some of these activities, in which we can get some excitement and put all this fabulous journalistic talent to work doing great things, rather than simply worrying that the particular model of the metropolitan newspaper simply doesn't work in the same way that it always did.
Right, right. And well, two quick thoughts. I think of Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonprofit here in Central Virginia in the Charlottesville area that reports on growth and development issues. And, of course, Brian Wheeler, their executive director, joins us every Tuesday afternoon. And that's a fantastic model of how a nonprofit can do some niche reporting. But I also worry about the extent to which we're losing some of our best political journalists. The Fourth Estate is just disappearing before our eyes.
It's very problematic. And even the papers that still exist, the way these folks are being stretched in multiple ways is beginning to resemble, it's not quite as bad as what happened to so many local television stations. 15-20 years ago, some of us are old enough to remember when the television stations had actually beat reporters covering politics. And I think Charlottesville actually is one of the few stations that actually still has a reporter in Richmond.
The only one.
Doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part, what now happens is that people who are covering politics at the state level on television stations go in and out of it. So they're doing their best, but they don't have the same level of knowledge and immersion that we used to see. And if that begins to happen to newspapers, too, that would just really be a tragedy because my experience with print-based reporters is that they're extremely knowledgeable about Virginia. They have some knowledge of its history, and many of these folks are being stretched extraordinarily thin right now. They're not only writing in-depth stories, they're writing for the blog 2 and 3 times a day, and they're really having trouble doing the kind of journalism that they think really is best for the public interest.
Yeah. Now, we're talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, it's not my style as a radio guy to get on here every day and hit the red button and alarm people. There's people that do that, even on this station. You know, they get on every day and they just, it's alarming and they try to frighten people and everything is alarming and scary and the world's coming to an end. And I don't do that. But our disappearance of good political journalists and the people who spend a career keeping an eye on government and reporting to the citizenry about what legislators are doing, I find that very alarming for democracy.
Well, I do as well, but I'm not an alarmist also, and I believe that if people are serving a very good purpose, there's going to be some natural evolution of the media. The newspapers are not going to look like the newspapers did 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and 4 years ago. But I'm confident that we will find some good models that will enable talented people who are creative and innovative and who have something to say, an outlet and a way to say it in a way that can be supported economically. I'm not a total naysayer about this.
Yeah.
And my sense really is that the newspaper industry itself has made mistake after mistake, that in part some of these places, not the individuals, but the institutions deserve their fate.
As a corporation, you mean, yeah.
As what they've done with these newspapers.
Yeah.
But having said that, I think we're in a time of dramatic evolution, and I believe that within 6 months or a year, we're going to be talking about some positive developments and not just about these continual round of layoff after layoff as these folks attempt to cut costs in a way that might enable them in some fashion to be viable at the end of the day. I should mention that, you know, the Media General also laid off a number of people in Charlottesville on the Daily Progress as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob Holsworth is the founder and president at VirginiaTomorrow.com, one of the best websites if you want to stay in touch about Virginia politics and public policy and you know what's going on. Bob joins us on Monday afternoons. Always appreciate it, Bob. Have a great week.
Same to you, Coy. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.